from WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. A generation of American teens has now grown up in the shadow of HIV and AIDS. Use a condom and you're safe, they were told. But other STDs continue to spread like wildfire. And now there's a serious, hidden epidemic among American youth. Teens suffer 75% of all reported gonorrhea cases. One in five young men have herpes. The news is even worse for young women. Up to 46% of teenage American girls are infected with the HPV virus, the primary cause of cervical cancer. By the time they're 30, almost half of all sexually active women have evidence of chlamydia infection. So how can the epidemic be stopped? A growing group of activists is calling for abstinence, and abstinence only. And they're speaking to very sympathetic ears in the Bush administration. The White House has proposed spending $138 million on abstinence-only education for teens in 2003. That's twice as much as this year. Critics say the Christian right has wrapped itself in a cloak of science and statistics to promote abstinence as sex ed, but the statistics remain. The one thing that both sides agree on is that health and well-being of America's teens is at stake. The debate reached a fever pitch last year when former Surgeon General David Satcher released a report advocating comprehensive sex education. The report caused a storm of controversy in Washington. Some groups supported Satcher, others called for his dismissal. Earlier, I spoke with David Satcher and asked him about the major conclusions of his report.
Well, it was the Surgeon General's call to action to promote sexual health and responsible sexual behavior. And I would say the major conclusions that we reached were, one, it's very important, given the major public health problem that we have in terms of sexual health, it's very important that we have sex education throughout the lifespan that is age-appropriate. So we recommend that sex education in the home, sex education in the school, and in churches even. Sex education, we think, is really critical. It ought to be comprehensive. It ought to be age-appropriate.
How was the report received by the Bush administration?
Well, the Bush administration disagreed with aspects of the report, and that was the second point I was going to make. We looked at what should be the components of that sex education, and we felt that on the one hand, abstinence ought to be a major component, but in addition to that, education ought to include information about how one, if sexually active, should take steps to protect himself and others. We looked at abstinence-only programs, and to date could not find evidence that they were effective. On the other hand, we found evidence that comprehensive sex education programs not only reduced the spread of sexually transmitted diseases, but also there was no evidence that these programs increased sexual activity or led to premature sexual behavior.
But, of course, there's been a big push toward abstinence education that the Bush administration has heartily embraced. Were they ready to hear about comprehensive sex education?
They were not. I mean, I think the day after the report came out, Ira Fleischer from the White House said that President Bush still held to the position that we should emphasize abstinence only. Now, understand, Tom, we were not saying that there should not be abstinence program. We said abstinence-only program, which would imply that you didn't talk to young people about anything else except abstinence. We didn't find any evidence that those programs were effective. On the other hand, we felt that it was very important to talk about abstinence, but also to make sure that young people understood that if, for whatever reason, they were sexually active or they decided to become sexually active, they needed to take optimal approaches to reducing the spread of sexually transmitted diseases or fund intended pregnancies.
Why won't abstinence-only education work in your mind?
Well, there are a few things. Number one, as you probably know, about 48 to 50% of high school students are sexually active. By the time they finish high school, that figure is up to above 60%. And so the question is, for young people who are sexually active, to not know how to protect themselves and others, I think it's really criminal. In an age of HIV infections, we now estimate that one half of the new HIV infections are occurring in young people between the ages of 15 and 24. We estimate that globally there will be 8 million of these young people infected with HIV over the next few years. So, I mean, I think we're not just talking about politics here. We're really talking about life and death issues. We may not understand why young people are sexually active in all cases. They have different backgrounds, different histories. But we do know that if they're sexually active or if they're going to be sexually active, they need to know how to protect themselves and others. And we have a responsibility to provide them with the information. That was the message in the report.
What do you say to parents and others who look at the warnings of sexually transmitted disease, who hear some scientists even saying that some of these will not be effectively protected against by condom use, and say, well, for my child, only abstinence is safe enough?
Well, you know, we made it very clear that that condoms are not 100% effective. They are certainly very effective at preventing the spread of HIV. Mm. You know, certainly over 90% effective in most studies, and they're very effective at preventing pregnancies. Also, again, when used consistently, very high rate of protection. We felt that despite the fact that they weren't perfect, just like telling people wear seatbelts in public health, it doesn't mean that when you have an accident that you're guaranteed not to be injured or to die. I mean, seatbelts are far less effective than condoms. And yet we urge people, and we have laws requiring people to wear seatbelts. We have young people who drink, teenagers, and we say don't drink. But we also say, for goodness sakes, if you drink, don't drive.
So what do you think about the recent Bush administration proposal to increase funding for abstinence-only education?
Well, I think it's a mistake to ignore the fact that there are many young people who need the information that is provided in comprehensive sex education program. They need it for themselves. They need it for their environment. Just over 10% of young people even talk to their parents about their sexual behavior. You know, 10% or so. That's the kind of world we live in. I mean, we all struggle with young people, with teenagers, whether it's their drinking or whether it's sexual activity. We don't fully understand why teenagers behave the way they do at any given time in their lives. But to withhold information from them seems to go against the grain of a parent-child relationship, for one thing, but certainly there are many children who need this information in the context of school and education.
David Satcher, you've observed all this from the perch of Surgeon General. What do you think is the bottom line? What's driving the abstinence-only campaign, abstinence-only interest? Is it parental fear or is it something else?
Well, I don't want to judge people, but let me just say that I, as Surgeon General, came at this from a public health perspective. And I think it's really unfortunate when we mix public health with politics and or religion. And I'm a very religious person, by the way. I taught teenagers Sunday school for over 10 years. But this is about public health and about how best to protect people in public health, not to judge them, but how best to protect them. And I think we owe people the information that would protect them, just like we owe people information about seatbelts that are certainly much less effective than condoms are at preventing the spread of HIV, for example. But they are public health facts, and I have a responsibility, therefore, to make sure that people who are going to be involved sexually know how to protect themselves and others. I would love to see teenagers remain abstinent. I say that in a report. But I also know that throughout the history of this country and every other country I know of, teenagers have been sexually active to a great extent.
David Satcher, thank you for joining us.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
David Satcher was Surgeon General of the United States from 1998 to 2001. He spoke with us from Washington. We're talking tonight about American teens, sexually transmitted disease, and the debate over abstinence-only education. Listeners, how much should abstinence be taught in sex ed classes? Should it be the only thing taught in American schools? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining us now from Washington, D.C. is Dr. Joe McElhaney. He's president and founder of the Medical Institute for Sexual Health. Good evening and welcome, Dr. McElhaney.
Hi, Tom. How are you this evening?
Very well. Thanks for being with us.
Sure.
Also with us from the studios of Vermont Public Radio is On Point's news analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly magazine. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom.
Dr. Joe McElhaney, you just heard David Satcher, former Surgeon General, say that it's imperative, in his view, for the public health of American teenagers that they receive comprehensive lessons in sex education.
Right.
Why do you think that abstinence only should be the way?
Well, first, let me say that I like David Satcher. I know him personally. Mm-hmm. I was one of 130 people in Arleigh, Virginia, that were his study group, his second study group for this call to action on promoting sexual health. So I'm very familiar with him and with the work of the production of that that report. There was no opportunity for a minority report. And I think there's some data that's very important for people to hear. Particularly as we talk, I would like for people to think about their own child or their own grandchild as I give some statistics and some information, if that's okay, Tom.
We're all ears now.
Okay. First, sex for a teenager is more dangerous for a teen while they're a teen than smoking cigarettes by far. Smoking cigarettes for a teen may give them lung cancer in 30 years or a bronchiectasis or some other lung problem. Sexual activity while they're a teenager, and one in four teens gets a new sexually transmitted disease every year if they're sexually active. And those diseases while they're a teenager can make them sterile from chlamydia. While they're a teenager, the STD can cause them to have abnormal cells on their cervix and then develop cervical cancer. By the way, I am an obstetrician and gynecologist and was in private practice for many, many years and saw teens with abnormal pap smears when I started practice back in 68, and there's an absolute epidemic of these with teenagers today. Let me just give you some numbers. And again, think of this for your own child, okay? Because if we think in terms of public policy, it can get all confused.
Well, we'll probably have to think of it both ways, but we're thinking of it as our own child right now.
I agree. But no, what I'm saying does certainly have applications for public policy. I'm not saying ignore that. The best study on human papillomavirus, which is the most common viral sexually transmitted disease right now, was a recent study on 18 to 22-year-old sexually active women. Half of them, 50% of them, were infected with human papillomavirus. Now, only about 5% of those will develop the abnormal pap smears or the genital warts. But that's when you talk 5% of half of the sexually active people, you're talking about a lot of people. Most of those will not have any symptoms until they actually have an abnormal pap smear picked up if they go to the doctor and get their pap smear done. 5 to 10% of sexually active teens are carrying chlamydia. Half of those will have that chlamydia infect their upper genital tract, their tubes and ovaries. My practice was infertility.
And chlamydia affects women and can cause sterility, you say?
It can cause sterility. Mm-hmm. A third of women who are the problem in a couple that can't get pregnant, a third of those women that are sterile because of sexually transmitted disease. I started an in vitro fertilization practice and practiced in that program for 11 years. Never once did I have a single one of those women say that anyone had ever told them where they could understand it, that their sexual activity back in high school or college could end their chance of ever having a baby.
Joe McElhaney, for years, the response to this was, practice safe sex.
Right.
Wear a condom. Be
that's
responsible,
right.
And you'll probably be okay.
That's right.
You're saying that's not enough. Why?
Well, I'm just saying, first, the evidence shows that. It was during the dominance of that message. Kids are going to be sexually active. The only thing we can really do is to teach them about condom use. Sure, tip our hat at abstinence like Dr. Satcher. And by the way, I like Dr. Satcher a lot. In fact, I called him. We talked personally just the other day. But you know, we just I don't see some of these things, right? And I don't think sometimes that he's thought about this in the way I'm trying to give some information here.
Jack Beatty, let me bring you in for just a moment. Joe McElhaney invites us to think about our own children and what the consequences would be if they got the STD that might leave them sterile or otherwise impaired. It's not a pretty thought.
It isn't, but, you know, I feel a little bit like the in Saul Bellow's novels, there's always a character called the reality instructor, and he's the wise guy that when someone outlines a sort of an ideal picture of the world, he says, but wait, the reality is. And the reality here is that half of kids are sexually active. And the reality is that's not going to stop by telling them, don't be sexually active. Then the question becomes, what do you do about those who are?
Jack, we'll come right back and talk about that. We've got to take a short break. We're talking about abstinence and teenage sex in America. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about abstinence and teenage sex in America. Is abstinence the only thing American schools should be teaching in sex ed classes? Is the threat of sexually transmitted disease now so great that only abstinence will do? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. It's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined tonight by Dr. Joe McElhaney. He's president and founder of the Medical Institute for Sexual Health based in Austin, Texas. And by Jack Beatty, our news analyst here at On Point. And Jack, just before our break, you were saying that you were ready to be the reality check here, that about half of American teenagers are sexually active in high school, and therefore abstinence, I guess, is, well, it's not fully relevant once you're sexually active.
Well, yeah, I think Colin Powell had the right answer on that when in the MTV interview he was asked, well, what should children do who are sexually active? And he said, use a condom. You know, Dr. McElhaney has a statistic here. He says only 57% of high school students report using a condom the last time they had intercourse, 57%. Well, how do we know whether the 43% who don't use them are not the identical or virtually the identical population that suffers from these infections?
Jack, we know that because of studies on kids who have used condoms and other data. I was on the National Institute of Health panel which studied the evidence about condoms and their effectiveness in preventing the transmission of sexually transmitted disease. And that met 2 years ago. Since that, there have been two or three more studies that have come out that we would have included in that. And it was very clear when we closed the doors and the 28 of us, and you couldn't, this was a group appointed by in the Clinton administration. You couldn't call it a conservative group by any stretch of the imagination. Condoms clearly reduce the risk of HIV by about 85% if they're used 100% of the time. And as a matter of fact, every study since then has shown exactly the same thing. Any less use than perfect use, they don't protect at all. Condoms do not reduce, there's no evidence that condoms reduce the risk of transmission sexually of human papillomavirus, the virus that causes 99% of cervical cancer. At that time, there was no evidence that condoms reduced the risk, but no evidence they didn't for any of the other diseases. And since that time, there have been some studies that show that condoms will reduce herpes risk by about 50%, reduce the risk of gonorrhea for women. The original study did show that gonorrhea for men would be reduced with 100% condom use.
But Joe McElhaney, Jack Beatty really raises a point related to that, which is if high school students, if teenagers are going to be sexually active, and history suggests, as David Satcher poses, that many of them probably will be, are we not doing them a disservice by only talking about abstinence? I mean, as you know, in the federally funded sex education classes now, nothing else can be discussed. I'm quoting here from Kelly Louie. She teaches in Cumberland, at the Cumberland YMCA. We never discuss where to get birth control or anything like that. We can't, she says. We do tell them that birth control is ineffective and that at least three types of sexually transmitted diseases can get through condoms, but that's about all the students in her classes learn beyond abstinence. Is that fair?
I don't think that's typical, Tom. Mm-hmm. And the reason I say it is because I'm very familiar with the Title V funding, which was the $50 million a year for abstinence education that Congress allowed. They do not say that they cannot talk about contraceptives. It says that they cannot promote anything but abstinence. But there's not a word in there about not talking about the true rates of protection or lack of protection from condoms and contraceptives.
But Title V says that it will finance education that has, quote, as its exclusive purpose, teaching the social, psychological, and health gains to be realized by abstaining from sexual activity.
Sure, but it doesn't keep them from talking about what the data shows about condoms at all. And I know very clearly that I've talked to two of the authors of that bill.
But
recently.
Does it keep them from talking about how to use a condom?
Look, let me say something else though, okay? And that is that. There's not any sex ed program, comprehensive program, that's ever been done that has dramatically impacted STD rates, pregnancy rates, or sexual activity with kids, except a program called the Carrera Program in New York, in which costs between $4,000 and $6,000 per student. It's a high ratio of paid employees, they say it's almost like a family for these inner-city girls. They get to know the girls so well, they can get them down and get Depo-Provera shots, and the pregnancy rates there have dropped exactly at the same rate as the amount of Depo-Provera they've been getting into the girls there. But Depo-Provera gives no protection against STDs at all. Now, the Johns Hopkins University did a study on their teens and their clinics. They found the incidence of chlamydia so high and the recurrence of chlamydia, they recommend that every single sexually active adolescent in America be tested for chlamydia every 6 months, regardless of condom or contraceptive use. Now, I know what I'm going to say next is probably the first time some people have heard this, but
we're ready.
But at the University of Pennsylvania, Annenberg School there on youth risk has just started a new program, and I was there for their initial meeting. And one of the health risks is obviously cigarettes, and we talked about that. Cigarettes back in the 50s were pretty much accepted. Today, cigarettes it's like a sin if anybody smokes around you. Much less smokes themselves.
You're saying premarital sex could be relegated to the same category.
I'm saying that the risk of disease for our teenagers is so enormous that most parents, and I even find most professionals, don't realize how common these things are. I'll bet you that you can ask almost any parent or physician in the country how common human papillomavirus is in sexually active adolescents, and they won't come within 25% of how commonly people are infected with it.
Joe McElhaney, stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation Deborah Hauser. She's Vice President of Advocates for Youth based in Washington, D.C. Good evening and welcome, Deborah Hauser.
Thank you. How are you?
We're well, thanks. Deborah, you've been listening to our conversation with David Satcher and Dr. Joe McElhaney. Your group is very active in preparing, as I understand it, curricula for sex education around the country. What's your sense of the effectiveness of an abstinence-only sex education path that is now followed by, what, almost a third of American schools?
Right. One-third of American secondary schools are now limiting the sex education in their classrooms to abstinence only. I found it pretty interesting that Dr. McElhaney would state that there are no programs that work that are comprehensive. And
meaning that talk about the whole range of safe sex, if you will.
And I did have a dramatic impact. I didn't say.
Well, I just want to clarify that.
Please.
And make sure. Abstinence-only programs that limit information to information about abstinence only and do, in fact, censor teachers from talking about the health benefits of contraception, there have been no evaluations to date that show that these work. In fact, an HHS report recently stated that and reiterated the fact that there are no studies to date that say abstinence-only programs work to do anything. There have been numerous studies on more comprehensive programs that talk about both abstinence, because we know that we want young people to delay sexual initiation, mm-hmm. but also talk about contraception and protection. And many of these studies show a good impact on the sexual behavior of young people. And just,
can you name one?
I'll just give you a few very small, quick examples. The World Health Organization reviewed 47 programs and found that comprehensive sex ed programs can, in fact, work. 17 of the studies on HIV or sexuality education delayed the onset of sexual activity, decreased overall sexual activity, or increased condom use by sexually active youth.
Deborah Hauser, I want to keep it out of a research study debate a little bit, but let me take it to the central point that Joel McElhaney makes, which is that there's an epidemic of sexually transmitted disease among teenagers, that the safest way to go is abstinence, and that if any other way, you're at risk of potentially lifelong, life-changing, damaging health problems. Coming out of an era where we've had a lot of sex education that was comprehensive, does that mean that sex education has failed?
No, I don't think sex education has failed. It can't work by itself. But the rates of sexual activity have declined from 1990 till now, as have the pregnancy rates. Condom use has increased greatly. Mm-hmm. I think the question really is, given that, yes, there is a crisis of sexually transmitted diseases among young people, the answer is not as simple as abstinence only. I mean, we have to get real about teens and sex. Most young people by the age of 17 have begun to have sex. So we have to give them honest sex education. And the answer is not in withholding information, but giving them, respecting them enough to give them all of the information. They're our kids. We teach them. We help them. We have the responsibility to give them the information. And think about your kids now. Don't you want them to have all that information? They absolutely need it. What we know is that honest sex education in the schools can help young people make better decisions. We also need parents to talk openly with their kids.
Joe McElhaney, let me put this to you. The main motor pushing abstinence some years ago was the Christian right. Now, this evening, you're bringing a lot of statistics to us about the incidence of sexually transmitted disease. What's the main motor today? Is it still a Christian agenda, or is it really scientific? And what about your own motivation here? Are you coming at this strictly as a physician, or do you have an ideological position? I noticed that your book, Sex, What You Don't Know Can Kill You, was published by Baker Bookhouse, which says its mission is to publish writings that promote historic Christianity.
Right.
So just clarify for us, if you would, your motivation in promoting abstinence only.
Well, my motivation started because I was seeing these infertile patients. I was beginning to see teenagers with abnormal pap smears. My last pregnant IVF patient had become infected with STD sometime in the past, stopped her birth control pills at 38, expected to get pregnant, couldn't, and then realized that she had become sterile from multiple sexual partners in the past. No one had ever warned her. She did get pregnant at 41 with IVF through our program. She had flown over from New Jersey to Austin, Texas. Unfortunately, the cord wrapped around the baby's neck when she was 5 months pregnant. The baby died inside of her, and now, of course, she'll never have another child on her own. She's adopted a couple of kids since then. I was seeing individual patients like that. So we started the Medical Institute as a medical organization because I found that most physicians and most parents did not know these statistics.
Is there a Christian or ideological element to your work, Dr. McElhaney?
Excuse me.
Is there? I just want to be absolutely sure. Beyond that, if there's a Christian or ideological component to your perspective on this.
No. I'm sorry, I didn't answer it clearly enough. No, we are a medical educational organization based purely on what the data shows. Mm-hmm. I certainly have my faith, but I would imagine that many of the people that take it, Dr. Satcher himself earlier said that he has a strong faith and taught Sunday school, which I...
Deborah Hauser, I hear you there.
Yeah, I'd like to just clarify that Dr. McElhaney does not represent mainstream medical organizations, and most of the mainstream medical associations, the AMA, the American Academy of Pediatrics, the Institute of Medicine, and I could go on, there are at least 100 medical and other professional organizations, have all been very clear that abstinence-only education is not good fiscal nor public health policy, as has the Surgeon General, as you heard Dr. Satcher say earlier. And, Dr. McElhaney has promoted a number of, a bit of misinformation tonight that I'd really like to clarify. Sexually transmitted diseases clearly are a problem. The answer is in sex education and the promotion of condom use for young people who are sexually active. The NIH, as well as the CDC, have issued recent statements that say that condoms are very effective against HIV, and isn't that what most of us are?
If they're used 100% of the time.
Let me finish. Condoms are very effective, and I'd rather that young people used condoms 100% of the time if they are sexually active than not at all. But clearly, as much as possible, it's best that they use them. They're also very effective against sexually transmitted diseases, such as gonorrhea, and against teenage pregnancy. And when we talk about HPV, which is Dr. McElhaney's main speaking point lately.
That's not true.
Wait, let me just talk about HPV for a second. HPV.
Let me speak for myself.
HPV is very common, as Dr. McElhaney said. However, what most people don't know is that HPV is most often harmless and symptomless, and that the cervical cancer that Dr. McElhaney talks about is only caused in very, very few cases, all of which are preventable if there's early detection. And that the NIH, the NIH and the CDC have all said that condoms can reduce the risk of HPV-associated cancer.
Deborah Hauser, Joe McElhaney, please stand by. I want to welcome our calls in. There's so many who want to join this conversation. Alex is calling from Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin. Hi, Alex. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Good to have you.
I appreciate all the conversation this evening. I'm a recently graduated physician practicing, and while I was in residency, I myself and several of my colleagues tried to start a teenage pregnancy prevention program in a Connecticut public school.
All right.
And as a volunteer community project, because we did a lot of deliveries for a community health center out in that area, and there was lots of teenage pregnancy, as I'm sure all of the other physicians on the line have seen themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing in that whole process, after doing a lot of the research that Dr. Hauser has mentioned already, really came to the conclusion that a comprehensive program was probably the best approach, and spent about 2 minutes with the superintendent of schools, and it was a meaningless down. This was really cool before all this debate came up. So I think
we're losing you a little bit, Alex, but you're saying that you were not permitted to discuss condoms?
Correct. And the main reason given was that there was going to be concern amongst certain segments of the parent groups who didn't believe that kind of thing should be talked about in school. So I think that there a lot of these decisions and things are based on how people are going to perceive the leaders who you say yes or no. I mean, I think Dr. Satcher made an incredible leap by sort of backing this from his position as Surgeon General. I think it's difficult as a president with or somebody like Dr. McElhaney who represents a large coalition of people to sort of stand up and say, hey, I think condom use is important. Because obviously, as a parent myself, I don't want my kids to have sex when they're 16 years old, but guess what? This is a reality. And so I think a lot of times people in those positions really have to have their head in the sand.
Alex, thank you for your call. Joe McElhaney, how about it? Here's someone who's worked closely with teenagers. He sees teenage pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
He's acknowledging that the fact of teenage sexual activity is probably a reality.
Mm-hmm.
So is it a head-in-the-sand posture to say abstinence only, abstinence only?
Well, first, I think it's the parents who need to think about their own kids and tell them what they think is best for their own kids, just like they would about cigarettes and alcohol and so forth. And the best studies about adolescents show very clearly mm-hmm. that the most powerful impact on kids avoiding risky behavior of any kind is their parents telling them they shouldn't get involved in it. This came out in the Ad Health study, which is the biggest study ever done on American adolescents. And so I think the first thing is that the parents need to take responsibility. Second, though, is I really think that they need to understand the data that I've just given about how common these diseases are. People can do what they want to do, but what I want is for people to know what this data shows.
We're listening. We've got to take a short break, Joe McElhaney. We're talking about abstinence and teenage sex in America. Is the threat of sexually transmitted disease now so great that only abstinence will do? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about abstinence and teenage sex in America. Our guests are Dr. Joel McElhaney, president and founder of the Medical Institute for Sexual Health in Austin, Texas, and Deborah Hauser. She's vice president of Advocates for Youth based in Washington, D.C. And the question is abstinence the only thing American schools should be teaching in sex ed class? Or does abstinence education cut teens off from vital understanding and information? Is it realistic, whatever the risks, to imagine a generation of young Americans embracing abstinence? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Dan is on the line. Welcome, Dan. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Good to have you.
Yeah, I guess here's a super reality check for you. I mean,
okay.
I think that really any amount of sex education for teenagers, I think it's important, but usually it's taught in a health class. It's one unit out of 1 year of high school.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about maybe 5 to 6 hours of education, and this is to combat all the sexual images that the children see these days on television and film.
Which are hyper-abundant, aren't they?
Exactly. I mean, watch MTV. for a half hour. It's soft porn, you know. I'm old enough to remember when MTV showed music videos. But,
but what does that suggest to you, Dan, that we should have more sex ed, more abstinence, throw up our hands?
I don't think we should throw up our hands, but I think that an abstinence-only program is a bit ridiculous when you look at the other education children are getting these days. There's a lot more education than what they're getting in school.
Yeah.
They're getting it from their CDs and television and everywhere else.
Dan, thanks for your call. Jack Beatty, there's no doubt Dan's right that it is a sex-saturated society we live in. People obviously respond to that in different ways. And some people are saying, hey, we've just got to take a radical perspective on this and get our teenagers out of the sexual active life.
Well, I thought Dan was making a very good point, and it's about a comprehensive sex education that would be part of the entire, that would permeate the high school years, age appropriate, so that this wouldn't just be something dashed in there. This would be a serious mode of education to deal with a serious public health threat, and it would teach effective use of these things. You know, we've just heard that studies show comprehensive sex education works. There's no studies that show that abstinence only works. So why is the Bush administration sponsoring this? Well, if the answer is clear, they're holding the health of American young people hostage to an ideological agenda. And
right.
that's based on denying reality. And it's based on what the Christian right thinks should be. Kids shouldn't have sex. Agreed. But they do. The question then becomes, what do you do about it? They don't have an answer.
Right.
Deborah Hauser?
I agree. I think Dan has a point. If the schools and the parents and other adults abrogate our responsibility to help young people get the right information or get all of the information, then they're left with their friends and television. We know that in countries where there is more openness about sexuality and where sex education is more comprehensive and it's more integrated into the curriculum, age appropriate all the way through school, and the media addresses sex more openly, but not so schizophrenically, that young people, in fact, have much better health outcomes than our young people do here in the United States. The teenage pregnancy rate is 11 times lower in the Netherlands than in the United States. The gonorrhea rate is 60 times lower in Germany than it is in the U.S., and yet these young people begin to have sex at the same time or a little bit later than our young people do.
Joe McElhaney, how do you account for that? The Netherlands and Germany are not countries where abstinence or strong Christianity would be heavily evident, and yet the numbers sound a lot better. What's your interpretation of that?
Well, we have actually been a part of a group that's gone to Europe and looked at that, and it's very different than Deborah says. There is not great openness about sexual issues there. There are not great sex ed programs going on. The incidence of STDs there are increasing greatly. Often, for example, they don't keep records the same way we do here. In Germany, for example, someone that's not a resident of Germany, and it's a little bit hard to become a German citizen. It isn't even counted in the statistics. If we want to talk about other countries, we can talk about Uganda, where President Mrs. Museveni have instituted a countrywide program about abstinence, and it's the only country in the world where there's been a dramatic decrease in HIV incidents. But I'd like to say a couple other things. One is Jack, you and Deborah say the comprehensive sex ed research shows that they're very successful. That is just not true. What they do show is they'll show fewer sex acts, fewer sex partners. None of them have shown a significant decline in the STD. As a matter of fact, the programs that work at CDC haven't even measured pregnancy rates, STD rates, or
but
sexual
they've
activity.
Measured what leads to, to sexually transmitted diseases.
They did
age
not
of
measure.
Sexual initiation, the lower the age of sexual initiation, the greater the risk, the more the partners,
they,
the greater
but
the
they
risk.
Didn't,
they did.
Well, let me talk. You've had your time there. Let me talk. I think the approach to, for example, I think it's a disgrace for us to say this many kids are sexually active, therefore all we can do is just try to reduce their risk, because the information I gave you about the effectiveness of condoms is the truth. And when Deborah just says, well, they're highly effective, that just totally obscures.
Well, but let's look at it this way. Joe Meckin, if I may ask, we all acknowledge, though, that there is a large percentage, clearly, of teenage Americans who are sexually active. If and not all of them are going to respond to an abstinence message. I don't know what percent it would actually pick up with. Does the abstinence-only approach mean you're kind of condemning the others to be ignorant about how to protect themselves in the instance where they are sexually active?
No, it's not. And as a matter of fact, first, let me just say that if we really listen to the kids, the millennial generation, Neil Howe points out very clearly, are a more conservative group of people than the preceding generation.
Hmm.
And if you look at what they're saying, the National Campaign to Prevent Teen Pregnancy, of which I'm a member of one of the research task force, mm-hmm. Did a survey, and it's just a pretty astounding thing. 93%, an overwhelming majority of teens, say they should be given a strong abstinence message. This was a nationwide. Let me talk, okay? They were saying that they should be given a strong abstinence message. 58% said sex is not acceptable for high school students, even if they take precautions against pregnancy and sexually transmitted disease. Two-thirds of those who are sexually active said they wish they had waited to start sexual activity. The teens today want this message. As a matter of fact, there was a survey done of kids who of kids' activity. 21% of this particular group had sex. They asked them what age those sexually active kids thought it was acceptable for kids to start sex. They said 21. They asked those kids' parents, the kids that were sexually active, what age the parents thought it was okay for kids to start sex. The parents said 18.
Well, there's a divergence. Joe McKinney, Deborah Hauser, stand by. I want to bring our callers in. Hassam is on the line. Welcome, Hassam. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I come originally from Egypt. It's, it's a Muslim country where sex before marriage is frowned upon. It's actually a sin in Islam. Before marriage. After marriage, it's encouraged and it's beautiful and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But just before marriage, it's a sin. The youth over there, it's frowned upon. And when a couple are actually doing it, because the teenagers, we know it, people look down on them. And this is like the whole society. So most people abstain until they get married.
And does it work better, do you think, than what you see in the West?
I think it works 100% better. Here, unfortunately, we have the media bombarding us, like Britney Spears and Shakira, and it's just sex all the time. So it's always on your mind. Over there, it's a lot different. It's not something that's like bombarding on us.
Well, Deborah Hauser, there's a vote from Egypt for Americans to look at the Muslim way and to look to restraint.
Yeah, I think that a strong abstinence message is completely fine to give, and most comprehensive sex education programs would give them. I would ask Hussein if he would believe that by providing young people with information about family planning and condoms, disease prevention, those young people that are that want to remain abstinent, that believe strongly for religious reasons or other reasons that they want to remain abstinent, the research shows that providing them with information does not make them sexually active, and that research is very conclusive. So I would be interested to know whether your caller believed that just getting the information would.
Assam, how about it? Have you seen much sex education in Egyptian schools? Is this part of the culture?
Actually, in the schools, we know about it. We have biology classes, and we know what happens between a man and a woman, but not in the sense like here where the media encourages us to actually have girlfriends and go out with them and all that. I have a few of my cousins who are like 24 years old, and they never had a girlfriend before. And this is like the norm. It's not something exceptional.
Well, there's a different culture, and we thank you for showing us a bigger perspective, Hassam. Reed's calling from Clintonville, Wisconsin. Welcome, Reed. You're on the air.
Thank you.
Sure.
Let me say kudos and many kudos to Ms. Hauser. What a voice of reason at a time when many of our youth throughout this country are in peril. I am a teacher. I teach in a minority school district here in Wisconsin. And anybody that thinks that abstinence is the answer totally is far and away out of the mainstream. When I hear students that I have speaking in the classroom about what they did the night before or the weekend before, the activities that they participate in, it's astounding. And
but have they had a pro abstinence education or not, Reed?
Well, there's no sense of abstinence. Mm-hmm. The sense and the culture of the society is to have sex as early as possible, basically, as it appears to me. And I've been in this school district for 24 years. I would tell you that speaking with our school nurse this past year, incidence of chlamydia among high school girls increased approximately 22% in 1 year. And I have seen students, I have taught everything from kindergarten to graduate students, and where I teach now, I've taught kindergarten through the high school level in the past 24 years. I have seen students come up through the ranks that are pregnant with a first child in junior high and a second child either still in junior high or in high school.
Deborah Hauser would say that means we need better sex ed. Joe McElhaney would say we need abstinence.
We need sex ed, and the parents don't even. Try to get a parent into a classroom to talk about a student's potential or ability or failing grades or whatever. You can't even get a parent to come in for a parent-teacher conference. And those parents are off various places doing their own thing.
Let alone to talk about the intimate details of their children's sex lives. Reed, thank you so much for your perspective. I want to get one more call in here if we can.
Yeah.
George is on the line. Welcome, George. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a strange story. I'm 56, and
okay.
I'm a homosexual man.
Okay.
And I would tell my friends years ago, the only safe sex is no sex. And they would laugh at me. And I would tell them, the younger ones too, that if you come out of your closet, you might go into your casket. Well, all my friends since 1979 on have died, except one. And it seems to me that people still won't listen. I listen to my own advice. I save myself.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a secret to save your life if you have common sense. And condoms do burst. But I just want to pass that on to the younger folk and to anyone who cares to listen.
George, thank you for the call. And there's a perspective from the gay side of things. Deborah Hauser, how do you respond to someone who's had the kind of severe experience that George has?
I totally feel for George and understand where he's coming from. One of the things that we're seeing is an increase in the HIV rates amongst young gay men in our early teens or late teens. And what we know is that when we talk about abstinence only and abstinence only until marriage, we totally alienate those young people in our classrooms that are gay. They don't have the right to get married in this country. So when are they supposed to have sex? And if we can't talk about condoms and we can't talk about abstinence along with condoms, then are we just ignoring these young people?
Joe McElhaney, we just got 20 seconds more. Last word goes to you. The budget for abstinence education is large. Do you think it can actually take hold nationwide and become the norm?
Well, yeah. I mean, as a matter of fact, Deborah a while ago said that the number of kids being involved sexually has been declining since 1990. Today, more than half of kids in high schools across the country right now are virgins. And I really think that we need to make the point that no kid who's an adolescent, who's not married, should have sexual activity, whether they're homosexual or heterosexual.
We're going to have to leave it there tonight. Dr. Joe McElhaney, president and founder of the Medical Institute for Sexual Health in Austin, Texas, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Tom.
And Deborah Hauser, vice president of Advocates for Youth in Washington, D.C., thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
Jack Beatty, last word?
I agree. We want kids not to have sex, but unfortunately they will. The question is, how do you protect them?
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
And this is WBUR. We're funded by